High school basketball was absolutely one of my favorite seasons of life. I have to admit, for those that don't know, I was semi-athletic in high school and got to play for my high school basketball team. And I look back at those years so fondly, which is one of the reasons my heart hurts during COVID and this global pandemic, because high school sports in this country and around the world, if you're in other parts of the country, we're talking 10th grade, 12th grade, that kind of season of schooling in your life here in the United States of America, high school sports is just a big part of adolescence and growing up. And COVID-19 has taken that away. I literally was in Uber yesterday and told my Uber driver, who was a dive master in Thailand, I am telling you, I'm going to do a whole podcast called Conversations with My Uber Driver. I have had literally some of the most fascinating conversations in my life with Uber drivers, but this incredible man was sharing about he was a dive master in Thailand. And then we got to talk about high school. When he was in high school, I was in high school. And then we started talking about COVID like we all do. And I said, you know, one of the saddest things about COVID-19, first and foremost, it's just the loss of human life. That always needs to be said. People are literally dying. It is a difficult, painful, challenging time. Now, so much less important than life and death, of course, is my son's sophomore year of high school basketball. My 16-year-old son, Zion, was all prepared and ready for his sophomore year of high school. He's playing on his varsity team, and he was so pumped and, well, it's gone, right? You can't go back, and he certainly doesn't want to redo his sophomore year of high school, but you can't really go back. It's just gone. COVID's been an interesting journey because we can all look back. It's interesting they call it COVID-19, and here we are in 2021. We can look back at the year plus that has been, and so much seems unrecoverable. So much seems it's lost. It's gone forever. Now, if you're quite literally in the middle of high school or college or middle school, you've essentially lost a whole year of the school experience. I think so much about college athletes in this country and how many of them are now missing out on the athletic experience they could have had, or some say maybe they should have had because of COVID-19. What have you lost because of COVID-19? Now, by asking that, I don't think it's probably the first time you've considered that. If you're like me, you probably consider it on a semi-regular basis. If it wasn't for COVID-19, I woulda, we coulda. The plan was, you know, this was the time we were gonna have that family vacation. You know, this was the time I was going to invest. This was the time I was gonna start my new business. This was the day we were gonna get married. We had big plans. What has COVID cost you? Do you look back and kind of go, man, I wish I could get that back? Maybe if you're like me, you look at COVID-19 and you think, did I miss some opportunities? I have a friend who's in the makeup industry. And she was saying to Chelsea and I that COVID, when it's over, she's hoping that her clients and her business is still there. Because in the meantime, it's been essentially gone. There's not projects and productions like there once was. And so the need for makeup artists just isn't what it once was. And her thought is, well, just maybe my business is going to be gone. Will I still have the friend I had? Because we haven't really been able to connect like we used to. Are you getting wires crossed relationally because you can't physically be with each other? Are you wondering, are you like me? Are your text messages filled with, hey, are you good? And that person texts back, yeah, what's up? Oh, I just haven't heard from you, didn't know, love you. There's so much ambiguity. There's so much distance, so much isolation. So many things been shut down. So many things delayed, postponed, or frankly canceled. What have you lost in COVID? Do you feel like you've lost opportunity? Do you feel like maybe you've lost the impetus, the passion, the energy to when things pick up again, whatever that looks like and whatever that means? Will I even have the same kind of passion and energy to walk that out or attempt that big idea I had? Maybe you look at COVID-19 and you think, will I ever recover? Will my professional life recover? Will my social life recover? Will my spiritual life recover? We're doing a collection of sermons and talks and messages on the subject, what you think you lost, what you think you lost. By no means am I suggesting that we spend all our time together gathering and worshiping Jesus and learning about Jesus and considering whether or not we're going to follow Jesus for those of us that maybe have yet to make a decision to declare that Jesus is in fact God and the point of all life. Wherever you are in your spiritual spectrum, you're here. And I don't want to spend our whole time counting all the different ways COVID has cost us. That's really not going to be that encouraging. But if we're bare bones honest, don't really know what bare bones means. It's like if you take off your skin and you're really honest, okay, that's weird, right? But if you're really honest at the soul level, do you ache a little bit in your heart for what could have been, what should have been, what would have been, but now it's lost? And maybe you're starting to think, is it ever recoverable? Will it ever be repaired? Will I ever have the opportunity I had? I think of just a couple of instances in my own life as a public speaker and a communicator and a writer and a thinker. I had incredible opportunities lined up before the global pandemic hit. And you do wonder, I certainly do, will those opportunities arise again? Or has the world changed? Will I never get that opportunity to step on that platform or share my story or tell that particular group of people or industry about the love of Jesus, or has what been canceled been lost? That's what I want to talk to you about today. If you have ever, in these long several months of a global pandemic, if you have ever felt like that, simply put, have you ever felt like you missed your moment? You missed your opportunity, and you're wondering if you'll ever get it back? Well, I remember growing up in church my whole life. And for those that don't know, my dad was the pastor of this church. His dad was a pastor. 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 His mom was a pastor. And it goes all the way back to a woman preaching, circuit writing, radical, incredible individual who she rode her horse, carried her gun and her Bible, and she told people about Jesus. I'm a seventh generation preacher. I've grown up in church long enough to know I've heard so many sermons where preachers just like me tell me, don't miss your moment. God's putting things together in your life, and don't get distracted. Don't lose the faith. Don't lose your passion. Don't lose your zeal. Don't you lose your focus. Memorize the Bible. Pray every day. Love your neighbors. Love your friends. And if you don't, you might miss your moment. And we treat life like a sporting event, that if you don't call the right play, and if you don't execute it perfectly, and you don't score the proverbial scoring, winning, touchdown, run, goal, whatever it is, you miss the moment, and you may never get it again. I am here, gladly ready to announce that that is not at all how God works. I got good news today. If you think you missed your moment, if you think you've missed an opportunity, if you feel like COVID has cost you dearly and you may never recover your humor, your personality, your social skills, your professional ability, your business idea, your marriage, whatever it might be that you believe COVID has cost you, I got good news. God is not like a referee or a commissioner of a sporting event. He is a redeemer. What does that mean? God is in the business of repair and restoring. He can restore, repair, locate, and relocate what you and I think we have lost. Now that brings us to Moses. I'm gonna talk about Moses for a few moments, and then we're going to read Hebrews in chapter 3 in 6 verses. But before we do, can I run you through one of the most formidable, considerable figures in all of the Bible narrative other than God himself is this man by the name of Moses. Now, maybe you've watched The Prince of Egypt. You're somewhat familiar with the story of Moses. To give you a little bit of background, Moses becomes a heroic figure, still is in practicing Judaism today. He is the recipient of what we call the Ten Commandments, the law, as it's been called. And Moses is a very considerable figure. Now, Moses appears in the story of the Bible at the beginning of the book of Exodus, but it is at the beginning of actually a very long, difficult time for the Jewish people or the Hebrew people, who God had chosen. God brought the Hebrew Jewish people from nothing and made them something. And by the time we pick up the story in the book of Exodus, the Hebrew people are millions, maybe as many as 2 million strong. And they came from a guy by the name of Abram, renamed Abraham, with his 90-year-old wife, Sarai, or Sarah, who laughed when God said, "You're gonna have a kid." But from this old couple who couldn't have kids anymore, God births a nation, the Jewish people, the Hebrew people. But by the time we pick up the story in Hebrews chapter 2, Hebrews chapter 1 and Hebrews chapter 2, Joseph, if you remember that name, coat of many colors, Joseph had great favor with Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt. But by the time we pick up the story in Exodus, the new Pharaoh knows nothing of Joseph and his agreement or partnership with the Hebrew people. And he begins to enslave the Hebrew people to build these great Egyptian edifices. Now, during this time, Pharaoh learns that the Hebrew people are growing at such a rapid rate because of the blessing of God that he gets scared that the Hebrew people might take over the Egyptians. And so he orders, maybe you've heard this part of the story, he orders that all male children, all male boys, all little Hebrew boys should be terminated, killed, murdered. Moses is newly born. Moses is a Hebrew boy. Moses' mother has a thought from God, and she puts her boy in a little basket and puts him on the river. Bathing in that river, downriver, no doubt, is Pharaoh's daughter. She picks up the basket out of providence, totally God's direction, opens it up. Here is this Hebrew child. She falls in love with the baby. She asks her father, Pharaoh, "Can I raise him?" And that's where we get the title Prince of Egypt. And for the first 40 years of Moses' life, he is in Egypt, raised as a pseudo prince, if you will. We don't have a lot of evidence that in any way Moses was given all of the benefits and privileges of the true Egyptian sons of Pharaoh, but yet he was raised in a royal family. No doubt with an enormous amount of ethnic tension, racism, prejudice, bigotry. Moses didn't have an easy 40 years of the first stage of his life, but it wasn't as difficult as his other Hebrew people who were, of course, enslaved. Now, the story records and gets right to it, but again, for those keeping track, Moses' life is broken up into three stages of 40. So you got 40 years in Egypt, then you got 40 years as he exits Egypt and he goes into a wilderness region, and then another 40 years where he is the champion leader of the Hebrew people and delivers them out of Egypt and the Red Sea and all that scene. And then Moses gives it over to Joshua and Joshua takes the people in the promised land. Okay, that is a lot of content, but stick with me. Moses in Exodus chapter 2, he's born and raised now in Egypt. And he sees, it says one day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, Exodus chapter 2. One of his people, he looked this way and that and seen no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. So Moses clearly knew he was Hebrew. Moses was raised an Egyptian, but evidently his mother, who was recruited by Pharaoh's daughter to raise her own child, not knowing, it's amazing the providence of God in Moses' life. But when he went out the next day, Moses thinking, maybe I'm supposed to be here to help my people. Moses seeing the tyrannical, horrific leadership of the Pharaoh, his pseudo father. He went out the next day. Behold, he saw two of his own people, the Hebrew people, struggling together. And he said to the man in the wrong, he said, why do you strike your companion? And he answered, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, surely the thing is known. When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. And so his love story begins. First 40 years, Egypt. Raised as an Egyptian, but understands his responsibility as a Hebrew. Raised in racism, prejudice, bigotry, horrific marginalization and oppression. Wants to help his people. Does so in an act of passion and rage and kills an Egyptian, buries him in the sand and thinks no one saw, and then finds out someone did see, runs for his life, and Pharaoh wants to kill his stepson. Moses takes off. Moses is no doubt distraught, discouraged, lost everything. He'll never be the same. Meets a very kind man who, over process of time, falls in love with his daughter and marries her, and for 40 years, Moses is a farmer. Moses is a country guy. Moses is out there with his family, loving his wife, his children, and everything is nice. Now, it's never what maybe Moses thought it would be. It's never what Moses maybe envisioned it would be. Running around the palace with opulence all around him, and yet stuck in the middle of looking like a Hebrew, raised as an Egyptian, watching the oppression of his own people, and yet privileged to be up under and out of that oppression. Probably took it upon himself, which of course not probably he did, to defend his own people. He wanted to fight racism. He wanted to fight the injustice, but he did what we all do oftentimes. He took things into his own hands. If you're like me, I look at COVID and I know these are radical ancient parallels we're making, but bear with me. I look at COVID and I think to myself, whatever I've lost, the time that I've lost, the talent I've lost, the energy I've lost, the opportunity I've lost, the open doors I've lost, as soon as I am going to work even that much harder to create those opportunities, knock on those doors, give myself opportunity and take care of my family and take care of my friends. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try harder. I'm going to be better. I'm going to be more focused. I'm going to set my goals. I'm going to be diligent and I'm going to be different than other people in COVID. COVID-19 for me will be the 19 things I will accomplish rather than 19 pounds people are gaining. You think about all the funny little things we say now. Well, I put on the old COVID-19, which is now apparently 19 pounds you can put on during these global quarantine days. Maybe the COVID-19 for you is the 19 things you're going to accomplish. So what do? When we feel like things are lost, we buckle down. I should say, those of us that are wired to do so, we buckle down and we tell ourselves, I am going to make this happen. Well, that backfires like it normally does. It did for Moses. He runs and probably, again, this is projection, concludes that the rest of his life will be in Midian with his wife, his kids, until one weird day, he sees a bush on fire. The bush is burning wildly, but it still has leaves. It's still a bush, and yet it's burning. Moses says, I will go and I will look and I will see what this thing is, that this bush is burning, but it is not consumed. And from the bush comes the voice of God. And he tells Moses, I'm going to make you the deliverer. I said I was going to make you. I preserved you for a purpose. Moses is blown away that God would choose him. Later, we learn that Moses probably most likely has a stuttering problem, and God gives him an assistant and a friend named Aaron. But over a process of time, Aaron fades, and Moses is the mouthpiece God called him to. Now, I want us to go to Hebrews chapter 3 just for a moment. And if you heard the door open, that's just my wife walking into the studio, or it's the Lord. Hebrews chapter 3 says this. So, dear brothers and sisters, you're now made holy, and each of you is invited to the feast of your heavenly calling. So fasten your thoughts fully onto Jesus, whom we embrace as our apostle, king priest. For he was faithful to the Father who appointed him in the same way that Moses was a model of faithfulness in what was entrusted to him. But Jesus is worthy to receive a much greater glory than Moses. In other words, Jesus is much better than Moses. For the one who builds a house deserves to be honored more than the house he builds. Every house is built by someone, but God is the designer and builder of all things. Indeed, Moses served God faithfully in all he gave to him to do. His work prophetically illustrates things that would later be spoken and fulfilled. But Jesus is more than a servant. He's faithful as the son in charge of God's house. And now we are part of his house if we continue courageously to hold firmly to our bold confidence and our victorious hope. Did you see that? I'm gonna read it again. Here's the stuff that sticks out to me. Moses was a model of faithfulness. Moses served God faithfully in all he gave him to do. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. We just got done. I mean, check out Exodus for yourself. Check out the book of Acts. It talks more about Moses. Moses was a stutterer. Moses was afraid. Moses was scared for his life. To preserve his own life, he ran from Egypt. He enjoyed his life removed from Egypt for 40 years and seemed to be content to live there for the rest of his days and had no plan to be the deliverer, no plan to be the leader of the Hebrew people. He was totally content away from the pressure, away from whether or not his life would be taken from him. Moses is scared like you. He's scared like me. Moses doesn't have a lot of confidence. Moses thought he could do it, tried to do it in his own strength. It didn't work. And he ran because he was a murderer. And because he was afraid. And he didn't fit as an Egyptian. And he didn't fit as a Hebrew. Where did he fit? He doesn't fit. Moses, the name Moses means drawn out. Drawn out. Quite literally, Moses was drawn out. Do I belong to the Egyptians? Do I belong to the Hebrews? Do I belong to God? Am I good enough? Am I strong enough? Am I smart enough? You know what? I'm going to move to the country, become a farmer, and I'm just going to just be done with all of this. Thanks, Mom, for saving my life. I hope the Pharaoh never finds me because he's got a bounty on my head, probably, and I'm done. And guess what God does? He consumes a little bush and starts talking to Moses from it. Moses goes, all right. Now, if I was Moses, I'd be like, you know, listen, God, if you like light a car on fire, but the car isn't consumed and you talk to me from the car, you know, like Knight Rider or something, and the car starts talking to me, that's probably enough for me to do whatever you said. But not Moses. Oh, no. The story goes on, church. Moses needs more signs. He needs to put his hand in his jacket and bring it out. It's leprous, not leprous, and signs. And I mean, he's got sticks and snakes and all kinds. I mean, Moses doesn't need one word, two words, three words. He needs signs. And God, you got to prove to me. And I can't go alone. Give me a friend. He's like, I'll give you Aaron. Fine. Like, God makes all of these concessions. Moses finally yields. Has an anger problem his entire leadership. Which is really encouraging to me if you've ever played golf with me. You know, like, faithful in Moses, a model of faithfulness. Moses served God faithfully. We got to redefine faithfulness according to Jesus, according to the scripture. This sermon is not about Moses' faithfulness. This sermon is about how God takes our faithless lives and turns them into something faithful. Turns our lives that have a lack of faith and turns our lives and makes them full of faith. That's what faithful means. It means Moses acted full of faith. Not all the time, maybe not even most of the time, but over a process of time. God made him the man he himself never thought he could be. In fact, even while the bush burned, and the stick became a snake, and his hand as a sign of God's providence was leprous, and then it wasn't. In all of those signs, Moses still doubted himself. Okay, I know you're with me, God, but give me a friend who can talk, because I'm not a good talker. I stutter, I'm not good. God's like, I can fix that too, though. I'm the same God who turned the stick into a snake and the snake into a stick. I can help your mouth, your lips, your gums. I can help them move. And so you, all right, I'll give you your buddy Aaron. And it's interesting because as you see the confidence of Moses grow, Aaron's verbal contribution fades and Moses becomes the man we celebrate today. Do you know how many years went by before Moses was full of faith? 80. His life is three stages of 40. 40 is the number of testing in the Bible. He goes through the first test, which this isn't true of everyone's life, but the first test is, where am I? Where am I in the world? Where do I fit and where do I belong? And the answer for the first 40 years of Moses' life was not really anywhere. And then from where am I? Moses goes to who am I? And I think he concluded, I'm going to be just me, and I'm going to be in the country and I'm going to be in the farm. But I had to be something deep inside of him that kept telling him, you were saved for something else. You were raised in the palace for something else. All Moses knew. His mom didn't just tell him that he was a Hebrew. His mom told him, I named you Moses, because in the midst of the edict of Pharaoh, God spared you, ironically, right under Pharaoh's nose. Oh, Moses, you're called, you're appointed. I think that calling faded in the country, in the wilderness. But then God came, and over, God kept telling Moses, this is who I am. Moses said, when I go, though, who am I going to tell? Who am I going to say sent me? He said, you tell him I am who I am, which is to say the all-sufficient God sent you, the all-knowing God sent you, the all-powerful, the ultimate title for God, the creator of heaven, is I am. I am. Whatever I am. What do you mean I am? But God, I am. People think God goes and gets stuff we need. No, he is what we need. It's interesting because in Hebrews chapter 3, the title, which is not inspired, but I certainly think it sheds great light on our passage. The title for most of the translations you're reading probably says something to the effect, Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus is greater than Moses. And of course, Hebrews chapter 3 is written to the Hebrew people, to the Jewish people, and it's saying that Moses and the law are great, but Jesus came and all the Moses and the law and the tabernacle, the traveling tent of which the Hebrew people worshiped through that tent, that was all a picture and a portrait of one who would come. He's greater than Moses. He's greater than the rules. He's greater than the law. He's greater than the tabernacle. His name is Jesus, and he is the fulfillment, and he's greater than Moses. I want to teach you about how Jesus works. Jesus does not make you a better version of yourself. Jesus is not here for self-improvement. This is not just about making just some adjustments and some tweaks and some opportunities to kind of self-improve. No, Jesus is better than you, and he's better than me. I don't just need a better me. I need a superhero that's beyond me. I don't just want to improve. I need to be saved. Do you hear what I'm saying? We have a world that truly believes that the problem is me and the answer is me. That's self-defeating logic and doesn't add up. If you are the problem, how can you be the answer? If I'm insufficient, I need a savior who is sufficient. And the Bible says Jesus is better than Moses. Well, we see this in Moses' life. We see the fear of Moses. Jesus is better than your fear. We see the failure of Moses. Jesus is better than your failure. We see the faithfulness of Moses. Jesus is greater than your faithfulness. Our hope is not in faithfulness. Our hope is not in diligence. Our hope is not in education. Our hope is not in exposure. Our hope is not in our own information, our own study, our own research. Our hope is that there is a rhyme and reason to the universe, that there is a maker and an architect and a designer and a king and a and a ruler and the one who controls everything, even the affairs of man. And if there is, I want to know him. And what is his name? His name is Wonderful Counselor, Messiah, Savior, Deliverer, Sufficient One. His name is Jesus Christ from Nazareth. This sermon is not about Moses. We don't need any more sermons about Moses. We need sermons about how Jesus is greater than Moses. Jesus is greater than Joshua. Jesus is our David. Jesus is the father of all the nations. He is our Abraham. It was Jesus who made Esther great. It was Jesus who gave Sarah a child. It was Jesus who made the prophet Joel speak from like an oracle of God. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Before the foundations of the world, the Lamb was slain. This whole world is about Jesus. The universe is about Jesus. The point is Jesus. The point is the designer and the architect and the creator, the one who invented breath, the one who invented the planet, the one who invented the concept of a human being. It's Jesus. I need Jesus. Have you missed your moment? Have you missed your moment? Right before the cameras came on, we were talking about cryptocurrency. We were talking about Bitcoin. This is not a commercial for Bitcoin. I know nothing about Bitcoin, so please don't take this as any advice. But sufficient to say, I have heard a number of people say, I could have invested in Bitcoin. Or maybe an easier, I could have invested in Tesla a long, long time ago. And now we kind of look back and we go, ah, right? How many of us would be like, man, if I could invest in Microsoft, woo, if I could have invested in Apple in the 80s, right? And what are we saying? Missed my chance. Missed my chance. That's life. I screwed up. I'm never having a great marriage. I'm not going to have a great marriage. I missed my moment. I'm not going to... things aren't going to work out between me and my parents. I burned that bridge. Did it ever occur to you or me that God builds bridges? God's a repairer. God's a restorer. What happens in Moses' life? 80 years of Moses, 120. They are not wasted. They are not lost. But I wouldn't coin the first 80 years of Moses' life as full of faith. I would coin the first 80 years of Moses' life as afraid, selfish, feeling sorry about himself, and then like really good at little things and daily things, but nothing about Moses' first 80 years strikes me as wow. No, he's a murderer. He's a fleer. He's a scaredy cat, is what we used to call each other in middle school. Moses was a model of faithfulness. Moses served God faithfully. Wait, what? And I think the response of God is, yeah, I worked it together. Yeah, it's my guy. You think everything's lost? You think it'll never happen? Have you let that dream die? Why? Well, it's been a year and a half. Oh no. Now I want to say this. There is no striving for what you think you have lost. I am here to tell you that you will have your burning bush moment. Now, I don't mean that God might consume a tennis net in front of you, but the tennis net doesn't burn while you're in the middle of a set with a friend playing a singles match. All of a sudden, the net just lights on fire and God's like, it is me. You want to talk about 40 love? I love you for 40, whatever. I don't think that's probably going to happen. But I believe in a God who will meet you after 80 years of running afraid. We're talking about 18 months. Maybe it's lost, and I don't fault you for feeling that way, because I certainly do. Pastors right now are some of the most discouraged people on the planet. They think church is over, and what they fail to realize is the church as we know it has just begun. And what's ahead is far greater than what's behind us. God has in store for us opportunities and open doors to love our fellow man and our neighbor like we never have before, that the message of his grace and his forgiveness and his love and his acceptance and his justice will ring and pour through the streets like a river. Yeah. Why? Because God restores. God repairs. There are people watching this. You have done something for so long with such minimal results, you have concluded that something is wrong with you. And I'm here to tell you, there is something wrong with all of us. Don't let successful people tell you that there's more wrong with you and that's why you're not as successful as them. Don't do that. Don't buy into that. It's not true. In fact, I have noticed that some of the most successful people have the most challenges in their own personal private life. This isn't a contest of who's better. I'm not looking for self-improvement. I'm looking for transformation. So I would just like to say to anyone willing to say, this is my church, I think what God's looking for is someone, when the bush starts to burn, who will walk close and say, I want to see what this is. God, do you still have a plan for my life? Yeah. You mean after 80 years? You still gonna do? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, right, I got all this sermon that I preached to you, but I want to give you a takeaway, a real, actual Bible takeaway from Hebrews. And I want to show you something that will help you keep on trusting God and not take things into your own hands. I would like to predict that your greatest challenge during this pandemic and quarantine will do things in your own strength based on your own understanding, based on your own criteria and the resource or energy you have available to you. And I am telling you, trust God. Trust God. Trust God. Bye. Great. All right. Trust God. Maybe you have a spouse who's like, how many more days are you going to pray and not get out there and do a job interview? And you're like, I did several job interviews. They bombed. They were bad. I don't know. What do you want from me? God wants trust. Listen again now. Indeed, Hebrews 3:5. Indeed, Moses served God faithfully in all he gave him to do. His work prophetically illustrates things that would later be spoken and fulfilled, Jesus. But Jesus is more than a servant. He was faithful as the Son in charge of the whole house. And now, we are part of this house. If we are faithful, diligent, do everything we're called to do, go to church, read our Bible, love our neighbor, and never cuss. I didn't say that. And now we are a part of this house if we continue courageously to hold firmly to our bold confidence. If we continue to courageously hold firmly to our bold confidence and our victorious hope. So I look at that and I'm like, oh God, that's so awesome. Like, hold on to our courageous, amazing confidence in you. How do we do that? How do we do that? I mean, you understand what this, let me synthesize this sermon. It's very simple. During what seems like a delay and your doubt and your fear and your worry, don't stress, strive, and try to make your future happen. Wait, worship, rest, revel, and rely in Jesus. Judah, I really want to do that. I don't want to move my family just for a job.
I don't want to walk away from what I have to go into something I'm not, is not sure. And so like, I'm really, there it is. Hold firmly to our bold confidence and our victorious hope, the Passion Translation says. Victorious hope, right there, the end of verse 6, literally means our rejoicing pride, our rejoicing, boasting in hope. It literally means, here's the most practical thing I can give you right now. Judah, instead of taking things into my hands, trying to make it happen, what should I do? Boast in the hope you have in Jesus. Boast. You know how you boast? You use your mouth. Man, I'm so blessed. God has provided. I'm gifted at this. I got done last night FaceTiming a friend saying, you know how gifted and talented you are by God? We start to boast in the hope, not boast in our own sufficiency. Are you like me? I don't feel sufficient. I don't feel like I'm enough. COVID's got as wore me down. And listen, I see all of the opportunities of COVID. This global pandemic is a recalibration. It's a revealer. We're learning. I understand all the positives and the takeaways, but late at night, I feel weary. I feel exhausted. And I feel like I need to see somebody in person. And will my life be what it was before? What am I supposed to do now? Because I feel like I'm losing every day. Boast in the better man. See, the Bible says Jesus is better than Moses, but here's what I'm going to start practicing. I'm going to start telling myself, Jesus is better than Judah. Jesus is better than Judah. This COVID-19 isn't ultimately about Judah. It's not ultimately about Chelsea. It's not ultimately about Jamal. It's not ultimately about Elijah. It's not ultimately about Sarah. It's not ultimately... Jesus is better. So I'm going to focus on Jesus. I'm going to talk about Jesus. I'm going to boast about Jesus. Jesus is going to give me the endurance. Jesus is in control. Jesus is not surprised by COVID-19. Jesus understands my gifts, my abilities, my talents, my desires, my inclinations, my future dreams. Jesus holds them all in the palm of his hand. Jesus is totally in control. I don't have to be in control because I'm not in control. In the moment I try to control, I strive and I stress and I fear and I worry and I get exhausted and I don't sleep well. So I'm not going to be that person. I'm going to find somebody over a Zoom call or a text message or FaceTime, and I'm going to take some minutes and let them know, you know who I am? I am forgiven. You know who I am? I am loved. You know who I am? I'm accepted. You know who I am? I'm God's son. I'm chosen. I'm appointed. You know what the definition of Christian is? The meaning of Christian is? It's called out. Moses was drawn out. You're called out. Come on, Moses. I don't care if 18 months turns into 80 years. Call me crazy. Moses is not about Moses anymore. He's about what God can do, what Jesus can do with an ordinary, faithless person. But don't you give up, church. Don't give up now. We're closer than we've ever been to all that God has prepared for us. So what will we do? Will we posture? Will we manipulate? Matriculate? What will we do? No, we will boast in Jesus. One of the most underestimated aspects of the human existence is bragging about Jesus. Please hear what I'm saying. I did not say bragging that you know Jesus. I'm talking about boasting that Jesus knows you and he loves everyone. And may your boasting provoke those around you to say, what kind of love do you speak about? What kind of forgiveness have you been given? Our story is not a story of nobility. That is not our legacy. That is not our heritage. And that is not our history. We are not here today as Jesus followers because there has been a noble, disciplined few who have preserved the dogma and doctrine of our faith. No. We are here because there is a God and he died on the middle cross, and he became our sin, and he rose again to let the whole world know there is only one man that death bows to, and his name is the resurrection and the life, and his name is Jesus. Let us speak of him. Let us sing of him. Let us write poetry of him. Let us think about him. Let us feast over good food and meals minus hydrogenated oils, refined sugar, and gluten. But let us celebrate with wonderful food the wonderful, mysterious, beautiful ways of Jesus. And come what may, God will make us faithful. God will make us faithful. You know, you're going to be the faithful person you always dreamed you could be. How will it happen? Just keep talking to Jesus and let's stay available to all he has in our future. Jesus, I thank you for the minutes and moments we share. I thank you for what you're doing, and I thank you for what you're saying. I thank you for what you're speaking. We need you. We love you. We want this all to be about you. Thank you for that. If you're here today, you're watching, and you'd say, Judah, I would like to receive the free gift of forgiveness that only Jesus offers. I want to invite you to do that right now by simply raising your hand. By raising your hand, you're really letting yourself know this is real. He's changing me. And in one moment of receptivity, you're forgiven forever. You'll spend eternity with your Heavenly Father. That's the promise. And I believe God will do something extraordinary through your life here on earth. I love you, church.